Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone, and welcome back to Pixels, the show where we cover the news from the gaming industry from the past couple of weeks. My name is Patrick Beja, and today I am joined by Mr. Ed Mitchell. As I said before we started recording, it's kind of hard to imply that you're now married with just saying Mr. Yep, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Been married now for about a little over 2 weeks, and nice. Everything is just grand.
Yeah? So do you feel different?
Not really. I mean, we were engaged for the greater part of a year, and we were dating for 7 years before that, so really it's not that much of a change.
Mm. Well, just, I mean... You're, as I was saying, a family man, and you're mm-hmm. going to have to be sure that you bring in, enough money, and surely your wife is going to stop working and start making babies.
Yeah, right.
That's how it works in the U.S., right?
Yeah, I think so. No, she she has to go back to work on Wednesday to back to her teaching job, and I'm just and as far as kids and stuff, we'll see.
Yeah. No, of course. I didn't mean to imply. It's just, you know, that's what I expect when people get married. It's really funny. Small tangent from video games. Before I met my wife, I had this idea that marriage is this half chore thing.
Uh-huh.
And when I met my wife, I was like, I couldn't wait to get married and all of this. And ever since I've been married, like, I realize that everyone around me who's married is, well, not everyone, but most people are actually super happy to be married. Mm-hmm. You know, it's weird. I don't know if it's our parents' generation that had a more terrible image of marriage or something. I don't know. But around me, everyone's super happy to be married and like, yeah, married life is the best. So hopefully it's the same for you.
Yeah, I think it's just you got to find the right person.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? Another important thing is in life is to find the right video game. And today we're going to be talking about two video games that I tried, and I'm going to be giving you my impressions on. That's Destiny 2 for the beta, and PUBG. I finally tried PUBG, PlayerUnknown's Battleground. And we're going to have a bunch of other small news, but you know, it's the middle of summer, so it might not be the longest show ever. But yeah, you know what? Let's start with the Destiny 2 beta, which, as people know, I love, love, love Destiny. I played it a lot. I thought The Taken King was one of the, you know, probably the best game of the year it came out. It was an amazing experience. And so I was really looking forward to the beta. And so it's not that I'm... all of a sudden, you know, my enthusiasm has been doused. That's not entirely true to say that. But what I think I can say is that the beta didn't tell me whether or not Destiny was going to be as cool as I hope it's going to be. Because it's a very narrow, vertical slice of the gameplay. There's, you know, one story mission, which is really cool, but still very short, and we don't know if the rest of the game is going to be as cool. There's one instance, basically one strike, which is okay. It's fun. It's a strike. They're all relatively similar. The gameplay is still very much there. The great gunplay and the fun of shooting aliens in the head is still absolutely there. It's graphically, it's, you know, Destiny 1.5. Arguably, it's just Destiny 1. Doesn't look that impressive. There were a couple of cool moments in the strike. There are, you know, that big drill, giant drill, where it's visually impressive. There are a few traversal moments that are fun in the strike. There's this moment in the single player mission where you get out into an area that you know very well from the Destiny 1, and it seamlessly transitions from single player to co-op multiplayer, where you have to kill, you know, a certain amount of waves of enemies, and then that point you're just hanging out with other guardians, and you're just doing that part of the mission with other people.
Does that stuff kind of auto join stuff? You just kind of creates the party for you.
That's kinda cool. But it's not even a party. You know, you just show up in an area and there's other people there. And, you know, you're just following the mission that you're doing. And there are other people that just happen to be roughly at the same stage of that mission. You know, it's just that part takes about, I don't know, let's say 5 minutes. And it's like a engineered in a way that you join that instance with two other people that happen to be on that same part of the mission. Maybe one of them just stays for a minute and then leaves to the other section. They just go walk away and then they disappear, but someone else joins in the middle of it, and it's completely seamless. So you're not talking with anyone, but it feels really great that you're joining the Guardians, the other ones, and you know, you have that story part of the thing where they're yelling at you, you know, oh, you have to, you know, push back the invasion of blah, 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 Guardians, you know, go together, whatever. And it just works. So that feels good. But we don't know if it's going to be more of that in the single player. I hope so. But more importantly, Destiny is a game that works on replayability. And replayability is, you know, just like games like Diablo and WoW and loot games, it's really tricky to make that work. I think they did it really well in Destiny 1, but I don't know if they're going to be doing it differently enough that it's going to bring more people in the game. And I don't know that they're not gonna. It's just that this beta didn't give you any clue as to whether or not they were achieving that. Mm-hmm. So still very excited for Destiny 2, but I don't know whether the beta is, you know, I still don't know after having played the beta whether or not the game is going to be any different from Destiny 1.
Well, what's the differences that you kind of want? Because I've heard like the thing that people really want is kind of to be more open world rather than the small little, hubs, that were in Destiny 1. Like how you had like Earth, but Earth was really just like a small map.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that's going to happen. I think that's wishful thinking, and it's not. It's just not achievable unless you make a persistent world type MMO, and that's not going to happen, I don't think. You know, I might not be the best person to ask because I like Destiny 1 very much, I think there's solo content is the obvious answer, but that doesn't fix things for people who want to play the game long term. So solo content is the easy answer, and I hope they're going to be making it enjoyable for the people who are looking for that. Other than that, I think they need to make the game more appealing for the end game, and that can happen with many different kinds of activities and getting that, you know, what the Taken King did was really amazing in terms of game design, in that you had an area of the map where you had missions that were repetitive but always fun because the gameplay is good, the gunplay is good, but also mysteries and things to explore and things that you would discover for weeks after the game had been, you know, launched. And that was something that was really compelling. But, you know, activities, group activities, short activities, long activities, like stuff to do that is varied and different and engaging more than there was in Destiny 1, I think is what I would be looking for. And from all accounts, that's what they're doing. So I'm still hopeful, but yeah. Okay. So we'll see what happens for Destiny 2 once it's out. I wouldn't recommend to anyone to rush out and buy it if you don't already like Destiny 1, though. Just wait for the reviews. And the other one is PlayerUnknown's Battleground, which is still like breaking all the records, like being so popular. It's second concurrent number of players on Steam above CSGO, below Dota 2, but still. And it's sold now 6 million units, which is insane. It's like, it's so popular. I'm pretty certain that it would win the election if PUBG was a candidate in 2020 in the US. That's how popular that game is. Although maybe people would argue the other candidates might not be as popular. But yeah, I mean, it's an incredible, incredible rising, meteoric rise for this game. And of course, so, you know, I went and played it. I bought it. I tried it. And I think I might be the only person in the world who doesn't love that game.
Really?
It's weird, you know? I'm not the only person. I think there are a number. When I tweeted this, a lot of people answered, no, you're not alone. We don't get it. You know, I don't get why it's so popular. I mean, I get it. I understand where the game's fun is, but it's really just not for me. It's a lot of people compare MOBAs to MMOs, and like you compress the experience of an MMO into a 20 or 40 minutes game in a MOBA. And what PUBG does is really compress the experience of all of those survival games, you know, H1Z1, ARK, and all of those, which were long-term survival. And if you would, you know, you would accumulate your stuff and try to build a shed and protect it. And like you would meet someone that would just show up and stab you and steal all your things. And you would need to start from scratch. And so those would be super long, like over days and days of gameplay. And PUBG is the short, compact version of that. And I think it is, and it's great fun for people who enjoy that fantasy of, I think there's a little bit of being a little bit of a sadist. Like, you have to be mean to play a little bit of meanness in PUBG. And you have to like to suffer as well. There might be a little bit of SM going on. I don't know. But it's just, it's not for me. I didn't love the survival games, and I don't love this one. It's just not my thing. I know you didn't play it, but did you like the survival games?
No, but I think what appeals to me for this game is just the quickness of how, like, when you lose in like Rust or something like that, you basically like go back to square one, you know?
Right, right.
And this is the same thing, except you don't feel like you built yourself up over hours and days playing.
Exactly, yeah.
And then you go back to square one, you're just screwed because everyone kind of starts off from scratch again. I kind of like the slow pace of everything as well. Like, I like how in the actual gameplay, it's kind of slow and methodical along the way. And also there's like planning that you have to do. If you're playing on teams, there's like, we're down to like three or four teams, but one team is just a stockpile of stuff.
Right.
And this other team was just lucky to survive. And so they just get destroyed by the last team. Mm. I like that kind of progression within a single game. That kind of stuff is a cool idea.
Well, it's definitely, you know, the parallel with MOBAs where you have that progression in a single game is very, very stark. And you're right. You know, sometimes, I mean, my games, I've sometimes managed to get to like the last 40 or 30 or 20 even without doing much. Like, I killed one or two people, but I was just mostly hiding and running around trying to get to the part of the map that the game zone gets reduced to, so they concentrate player. It's a very well done game. I mean, it's very well designed. As Terpser was saying in the previous episode, the guy, PlayerUnknown, has been developing that game for basically, you know, three games. Yeah, I mean, success is definitely deserved. It's just, yeah, it's not. It's not my thing.
Have you gotten a chicken dinner yet?
No.
I think that might be why you haven't enjoyed it.
I'm not interested in doing it, you know? I'm like, yeah, I get it. I get in a car and I drive and then someone tries to shoot me from afar and I might get away. And then there's this guy who just, I saw him get into this building and I managed to follow him. Like one game I was in the parachute, like I was parachuting in the beginning of the game. And I was just above someone else, like literally 10 meters above them. So I saw them land, get into a house, followed them, and punched them to death. And, you know, that was okay. But it's not like I don't get... If we're talking about, like, FPSs, TPSs, whatever, I get much more joy out of a Doom, if we're going to talk single player, or Overwatch, if we're going to talk multiplayer, shooting someone in that context of rapid, like, yeah, then stalking someone and like piling up on weapons and ammunitions and the stress of, oh my God, if I die, then the game's over. So I don't want to die even once. And I mean, obviously, as you were saying, if you do die, then you just start another game. It doesn't matter. So the frustration of those survival games isn't there, but I think it's not. Yeah. I don't know. And I'm sure that in groups it's more fun, but I still don't think it would be for me.
Yeah, I think if I'm going to play, I'm probably going to play with a friend, or I guess three is the other option. Mm-hmm. Just so we can kind of fail together or succeed together, you know.
Yeah, and it's and I'm sure in that context there's a lot of, you know, hanging out together factor, just like there is in Destiny, mm-hmm. which for many people is just an just like, you know, other games like this, like WoW, like other games in that on that model, it's just an excuse to hang out and have fun and, you know, just, yeah. So, yeah, I understand those as well, but yeah, I guess for those who tried PlayerUnknown's Battleground and who thought, oh, that's weird, that's not my type of thing, then you're not alone. and we're not alone. So, and that's fine, you know, to each their own. There are lots of different types of games and not everyone has to love all of them. But I definitely recognize the qualities of PUBG. It's a very well thought out, well designed experience. And then numbers on Valve. We don't get lots of numbers on you know, Steam's. Well, actually, it's Steam, not just Valve. We had a few numbers that were revealed in at Casual Connect, which is a conference where Valve had a presentation, and they mentioned a few really impressive things, such as, they now have 67 monthly active players, 67 million, of course, 33 million daily active players, and they have an average of 14 million concurrent users at peak every day. That is up from 8.4 concurrent at peak in 2015.
And that's bigger, they have a bigger daily active user count than Xbox Live does now?
Yeah,
at least the most recent number that Microsoft reported at Xbox Live.
And, you know, so it's. I mean, we all know that Steam has been growing like crazy, and that, you know, they have a number of games that are increasingly daily releases, like insane amounts. But it's interesting to see numbers there for daily monthly active users and peak, like 14 million peak is crazy. So, mm-hmm. yeah, there's not a lot to discuss here. It's just Valve is getting lots of, you know, gamers, and that's definitely the main part of their business now. So I'm not sure we're going to be seeing many games in the future from Valve.
I wonder if it's tough. I wonder if the Destiny 2 going on Battle.net was kind of not as great of a call as it would have been to put on Steam. I'm sure someone out there did the math and kind of figured out that it was better to keep the 30% cut or whatever it is for that Valve takes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure, you know, 30% is a lot. And I think it's a couple of things. We sort of discussed it when it came out, but when the news came out. But basically, yeah, 30% is a lot of money that you don't want to be giving Valve if you can avoid it. And the other thing is the game Destiny is so tailored to the tastes of the Blizzard community.
Oh, yeah, for
and
sure.
And that visibility is great on the Blizzard launcher. So I think overall it's a no-brainer for that game even more than maybe some other ones. But yeah, I'm sure it's going to be a net positive for them. There's no way it's not going to be. I don't know that anyone who wants to play Destiny is not going to launch their Blizzard launcher to play it. So.
Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, I'm not too concerned about getting old people into playing, especially people that have PCs.
Nintendo Switch is, well, okay. Splatoon 2 has been released, and that is incredibly popular, especially in Japan. They have sold another 2 million Switches over the past month, I believe. And so the company is really profitable. But there's one single but significant taint on the Nintendo Switch, and that is the online app, which is getting... horrible, not even reviews, like people are very pissed about the way the online app works, especially since you have to use it in Splatoon if you want to communicate with your squad. And if you don't know how that works, the entirety of the group finding, or at least the voice comms, is separated from the console on the Switch. Like, it actually is impossible to have voice comms on the Switch. You have to use your smartphone to connect to your group's voice comms. And that creates huge amounts of issues, with one of which being, if you want to listen to the game and the audio from the voice comms, you have to use some Frankensteinian connector that will connect the two, and you know, it's a kind of a splitter, which is ridiculous. And then in the beginning, at least, if you quit, if the app, if your phone went into sleep mode, then the app would be quit and you would be disconnected from the voice comms, which is, how can you even design an app like this? Like, we had hopes that Nintendo had figured out online play. Nope. Not, I mean, ultimately what that means, I think, is they just don't care about that aspect of it. They just don't think it's important, and they don't want the kids who are going to be playing on the Switch. I think it might even be half intentional. It's kind of like the
I think it's about the kids, really. Mm. Because they don't want to expose a huge part of their audience, almost the biggest part of their audience probably, to just people mouthing off online. So it's just not as big of a priority for them.
Yeah.
But I mean, it sucks because you know, if they had really just taken a half a second to think about it, they could have just put a microphone firmware and the hardware for like a microphone in the Switch console itself, and just plug in to your little Apple headphones or whatever into the Switch, and then you'd have a microphone there.
Well, that's why I'm saying I think they actively don't want to. I think it was a choice that this wouldn't be possible for the Switch, because it wouldn't, it's not a design or, you know, hardware issue. It would have been very easy to integrate, but they decided they didn't want to do that. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing. For us, it's obviously frustrating because we can't chat with people we want to play with. But maybe when you're a parent, you're like, what is the thing that is safe? Like, what is the one where I'm sure I can give to my 6, 7, 8-year-old kid and nothing bad's going to happen?
Yeah. I think another reason why they might have kind of thought it wasn't that big of a deal is because everyone can pretty much just use like Discord or something like that to kind of get together if they want to with a group of friends that they know, you know?
Yeah, so, I guess, yeah. But then you still have the issue of connecting to, you know, listening to your friends and to the game at the same time. You need that.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe people are going to use accessories. And maybe, I mean, yes, as good as Splatoon is, are there going to be people who are going to want to... If you really want to, there are ways to do it, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I would be very curious to hear from Nintendo, you know, in 20 years, someone telling us, yes, actually, it was a conscious effort to minimize the even, you know, possibility to obliterate the possibility of toxicity for people who wanted their kids to have a good experience. Like, if you give the console to your kid, well, you're not going to give them your smartphone at the same time. So, you know, it's impossible for them to fall into the internet's horrible, you know, toxic environment. So would be curious to be a fly on the wall of those conversations in Kyoto. PlayStation 4 is getting a price increase for... I mean, PlayStation Plus is getting a price increase, and that has led people to speculate about the potential inclusion of PlayStation Now games into the PlayStation Plus service. And that's a really interesting one to me because... PlayStation Now is, for those who don't remember, the streaming service where you have access to a library of hundreds of PlayStation 3 and now PlayStation 4 games streaming. So you would subscribe to it for, I think the cheapest one was maybe $100 a year. Was it that cheap? Maybe a little bit more, but... You can even play on PC with a streaming client. You can play on your PS3, PS4, etc. But you have access to all of the games. And one of the interesting theory that people have had is that they would include into the PlayStation Plus service access to, let's say, two games from PlayStation Now every month. And let's imagine that you can choose which of those two games are. That would be a pretty compelling offer. I think, you know, if there's this universal library, well, it's not quite universal, of course, but you have a lot of oldies and goodies and even some of the PlayStation 4 titles now, and you have access to all of them, and every month you can choose you're going to play one or two of those. And you can have, you know, they limit it. So there's still the PlayStation Now service somewhere if you want to have access to all of them. And if you basically want to make it your primary gaming service. But if you subscribe to PlayStation Plus, you have access to one or two to try stuff or explore that library. I think it would be pretty compelling. What do you think?
Yeah, my thing with, I still don't like the idea of PlayStation Now. I really think that the winner comparing the Xbox version to Game Pass is the Game Pass every time. I mean, even if the games are free to play with your PlayStation Plus subscription, maybe that will change my mind. I just don't like the idea of paying like an hourly rate to play a game that's...
Oh, but that's not the case anymore. The PlayStation Now...
It's a month, right? You pay for a month and then you get access to pretty much everything.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of a Netflix. You know, they have all been trying to crack that Netflix for gaming nut. Mm-hmm. And the PlayStation Now is that, but it's a little bit more expensive. And then the Xbox Game Pass is the same, except you actually install the game. But it's still more expensive. What is interesting with this theory, which is very much a theory, is that it would be integrated into your PlayStation Plus subscription. Like, it's as if you would have access to... And the interesting thing is, of course, if they don't select the games for you. If they select them for you, it's just like PlayStation Plus has been for a long time and Xbox Live has been for a long time. They just give you a couple of games every month. That's happened, you know, already. The interesting part is if they integrate it into your existing subscription and allow you to play two games of your choice out of the entire selection. That
would be cool, but I find that unlikely. I think they're going to pick the game for you if they give you...
Okay. Well, if that's the case, then it's kind of whatever. But... top games in the US in 2017, the first half. Don't look. Don't look. Have you looked yet?
No.
Okay. Maybe. All right. Don't look. Can you give me the top three best-selling games in the US for the first half of 2017? Your best educated guess. Go.
So I know that Zelda is probably one of them.
Okay.
I think I remember seeing that Horizon Zero Dawn sold really well, but that something outsold it, and I can't remember what it is.
Okay.
And I guess the third one would be...
It's not easy, is it?
No.
Well, all right, you're off the hook.
Yeah.
Because that is exactly the reaction I had. I was thinking, you know, Zelda, Horizon, and maybe something else.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah.
You just looked at the list, right?
I looked at it, but I remember For Honor was another one that sold like hotcakes.
Exactly. And that is what I mean. Yes, we know it sold well. I think it's kind of a interesting... so here's the actual list. Ghost Recon Wildlands. I would never, ever in a million years have guessed it was the best-selling game of the first half of 2017. Zelda, second. That, yes, I understand. For Honor is third. GTA 5 is number four on that list. That game, I mean, it is making history. It's insane. Then we have Horizon, number 5. Injustice 2, number 6. Number 7 is Mass Effect Andromeda. Number 8 is Resident Evil 7. So I understand those games being on the list, but the top three, apart from Zelda, I mean Ghost Recon and For Honor, it's really interesting because they didn't make a lot of noise and a lot of, you know, a big splash in the media, even on YouTube. I don't think they weren't huge games, and yet sales wise clearly in the US at least they are the best performers. I don't know how my view of this industry is skewed, because I would never have guessed it. And some people, I said this on Twitter, and people told me, you know, they came back like a little bit I don't know how to say it, but they were like, of course, you know, why would you be surprised?
Yeah,
they're great games. Like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, I'm not saying they're not good games. I just wouldn't have thought they had sold that much. So, yeah, I just found it really interesting.
Yeah, I think really it's just the people that we followed, the Ghost Recon Wildlands didn't really appeal to them, you know?
Yeah, but even in the media... Have you heard about Wildlands beyond its release, where people are saying, yeah, it's a good game? I haven't really heard about it so much, right?
But I don't know how much that you would really hear about it outside of its release, just because of the way the cycle goes.
I guess, you know? Yeah. I guess that's an example of the divide between the media on a
exactly.
topic. And that's true for any topic, I'm sure, but the media on a topic and the actual sales. But you would think that if the game is the best-selling game of the semester, maybe it's also a week-ish semester, but everyone talked about Zelda and Horizon, and Zelda had incredible, you know, groundbreaking game design aspects that made it stand out. Horizon
But you had
really.
To buy you had to either buy it for a defunct console that no one had or wanted to buy, or you had to buy it for a new console that was at short supply.
Sure. I mean, there were a number, you know, but we still heard about it a lot. But we also heard about Horizon, which honestly wasn't gameplay-wise, game design-wise, it wasn't groundbreaking. It was doing everything the open-world games have been doing for years, except better and a little bit more compelling, right? But it wasn't, incredible.
But that's a game that doesn't exist on two of the major consoles, at the PC and the Xbox One.
That's true. I guess the point is that
there's an entire subsection of gamers that don't read Polygon every day or IGN or whatever, and they don't go on to the newest hotness every week or every day really as new games come out. I think they find their game, the game that is very popular, and I mean, shooters are incredibly popular, and open world shooters even more so, apparently, as evidenced by these numbers. So I think that it's really just there's a section of gamers that look at what appeals to them really is this open world shooter, or even For Honor, which is not an open world game, but it's multiplayer combat. And I think what it is that all these people, they're like the Call of Duty players or whatever, they all gravitate towards these multiplayer games.
Yeah, I guess. And the multi-platform, you made a great point. That is also one of the reasons why it's selling so much more than the single platform exclusives. But yeah, there must be a big crowd of people who is very silent. It's almost like, you know, other parallels could be drawn. it's not just, yeah, I mean, the 99% and the silent, you know, middle America, maybe it's the same in gaming. Interesting parallels there. Hey, Facebook is apparently planning to release a $200-ish standalone VR headset in 2018. That would be a super interesting move. I mean, $200 for a standalone thing, $200. The thing you have to think about at that point is it's probably going to be mobile components, mobile phone components, which a high-end mobile phone on components only costs about $200 to $300. So if we look at that type of quality and capabilities, it's probably possible to create a standalone wireless headset for about $200 that would be of acceptable quality. It's not going to be the top of the line, but it would do the job.
I think what it is that the parts to create these VR headsets in general are just getting cheaper.
Well, that's what happened because of the smartphone industry. It's basically a screen and a CPU, GPU that can output. I mean, of course, you need like 90 frames per second in order to not puke. You need good resolution. But we have those in the smartphone market now. It wouldn't be the best one, but I'm even more curious to know if that would, what impact that would have on the VR industry. It seems like a lot of people for $200, $250 would think, all right, I'll give this a try. Maybe not everyone in the world, but tech enthusiasts, game enthusiasts, I think they would take the plunge, and the numbers could be huge and put Facebook on the forefront of that paradigm shift, if it ends up being a paradigm shift.
Mm-hmm.
Would you buy one?
For $200, probably. I haven't been able to convince myself that it's worth $600 or $800 for a set. If it's standalone wireless and doesn't need any connectors, I like to see like what people think before I actually pull the trigger and say like and drop $200 on it, just because I'm worried about the like lag or whatever that can cause some people to barf.
Right, of course. Yeah, it would need to be to have that locked, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, yeah, I really think a lot of people would be like you and think, yeah, for $200, sure, I'd do it. And then, you know, the trick is, in order to have the full VR experience, you also need like the touch-type controllers. And that would be an extra, I don't know, $150. And they wouldn't tell you that from the get-go, but but still, it makes it accessible for $200, and you can still do stuff. I think that would be a huge move. It's also a move of Facebook getting into hardware, which is kind of crazy. Although, you know, that might be under the name of Oculus, but still. But yeah, it would be a huge, huge move. So would be curious to see what happens there. What else? Have you seen that Good Game trailer, the YouTube Red series? It's basically a scripted series from Dan Harmon. And I don't know.
It doesn't look good. Does it feel too pandery?
Not too pandery, but so basically what it is a series produced by a comedy, a sitcom, kind of sitcom produced by YouTube Red around a team of misfits trying to become this esports team on this fictional game that is, you know, super popular. And it's produced by the creator of Community and Rick and Morty, Dan Harmon. And I loved Community. I watched a couple of episodes of Rick and Morty and it wasn't my thing. And I got yelled at for that many, many times. But it feels... I can't decide whether I am... It feels icky for me because I know what esports actually are, and this feels like esports for television, or if it's because the thing is just not, doesn't look great. I don't know, but it didn't look, I'll watch it if it's available somewhere. We don't have YouTube Red here, but I'll watch it. I'm just not convinced at this point that this mm-hmm. is something that's going to present, you know, it's like the kind of nerds and geeks that you would see years ago, and not only, but I don't know. I mean,
seems like caricatures of maybe.
Yeah, it looks dumb. That's my problem. It looks dumb. And to be fair, Community, the brilliance of Community is that they are all incredibly, incredibly idiotic, and that's the fun of it. But I don't know. But yeah, go check out the trailer. It's available, and we'll see once the thing is actually available. And finally, last bit of news is Tencent is getting ready, apparently, to release Honor of Kings in the West, basically US, France, Italy, Spain, and Germany. Do you know what Honor of Kings even is?
No, but that was before I clicked the link to read the article.
So basically, Honor of Kings is Tencent's mobile MOBA. Tencent also owns Riot, so they basically mm-hmm. own League of Legends. And Honor of Kings is the one mobile MOBA that has managed to rival League of Legends on the mobile platform. Basically, it's creating a virtuous circle between their two properties, but it's very similar to League of Legends. It's not one eating into the other. It's really the two growing together. And there have been a number of people who have tried to create a viable MOBA on the mobile platforms. I think Vainglory might be the one we've heard of the most, and it's enjoyed some popularity. But Honor of Kings is really growing like crazy in China, and it seems like it's going to be coming to the West fairly soon. So, and it's adapted to the mobile platform. Games are shorter, it's a little bit easier to control, and all of those. So it's not like a direct translation of League of Legends into the mobile, because obviously wouldn't work. Honor of Kings. Look out for it. I can't imagine it's not going to be coming to the West. But I'm very curious to see how it works out as well. I don't use my phone for gaming all that much, and my argument is that there aren't many actual core gamer games on the phone, and maybe that's going to be adding one to the very short list of games I consider playing on the phone. So there you go.
Do you know how short the games are?
I think it's about 20 minutes. It's more Heroes of the Storm than League of Legends-ish.
The problem was, even with a 20-minute game, like when I'm playing on my phone, it's like for a very short amount of time.
Yeah, but I think it might be because there aren't games that are compelling you to play, like to set time aside for those games on your phone.
That's been maybe it kind of lends to your argument, but like, when I'm at home, I want to play something like on my TV or whatever, not something that's on my phone.
Yeah, I think there's there's an argument to be made that phones are just not... I mean, in China and in many countries, the phone is actually the primary gaming platform.
Right.
So, yeah, that also plays into it.
I mean, but if this game is good, I might just be taking 20 minutes on the toilet every time I need to go to the bathroom. But
or on your couch. I mean, I think, you know, the way I put it is there aren't really... the difference between core games or gamers and casual games is casual games are or gamers are people who play when they have some free time. And core gamers are people who make time to play the games they want to play.
Right.
That's and so far the mobile in the West, mobile market has been geared towards or has functioned with casual gamers, meaning it was games that were tailored for people who'd play when they had some free time. It was usually a little bit short. It was on the train, on the public transportation, whatever. I think if there are some super compelling games on those platforms, then there's no reason core gamers wouldn't gravitate towards them and actually spend the time, you know, set the time aside to play the games. Mm-hmm. There's an argument to be made. The form factor isn't the best for long play sessions, but I think a lot of people playing in countries where those platforms are the main gaming platforms, they would tell you, no, you can absolutely play seriously on a mobile game, so on a mobile platform. So I don't know. On the other hand, Honor of Kings, it's still a mobile version of a MOBA. So if you want a really good MOBA, you already have lots of options on your serious gaming platform, which is more comfortable. So, yeah. And that's about it. There's Uncharted: The Lost Legacy coming out fairly soon in at the end of the month, and that feels like a full game, a full Uncharted game, according to the first impressions. Dragon Quest XI has been confirmed for the West in 2018, so that's cool for people who are waiting for it. And a couple of other things I don't think we need to get into. It's a much lighter episode. It's the middle of summer. So, yeah, things aren't super incredibly active. But Gamescom is coming up in a couple of weeks, and there should be...
PAX Prime is a couple of weeks, too.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's always it's always like Labor Day,
cool.
Which in the U.S. is September 1st through 4th, the weekend of that.
Yeah, so there's gonna stuff that's gonna be happening. I mean, I know at Gamescom there's a Microsoft conference, and Blizzard always has something happening at Gamescom. So, I mean, that's been the case for the last couple of years at least. So hopefully it will be the case this time as well. So yeah, things are gonna start back up. But for now, I think that is going to be it for this episode. Would you mind telling the good folk listening where they can find more of what you do, good sir?
Yeah, sure. You can follow me on Twitter at @adesis. That's @EDEESIS. The website that I work for is called 4playernetwork.com, and we stream live every night at 4pp.tv. The podcast for that I am not on, but the other people that work on the website are on, and that's Thursday nights at 9 Eastern, I think. Yeah, 9 Eastern. And I stream, I play video games every night, or not every night, Monday nights at 7 o'clock Eastern. And tonight I'm going to be playing the rest of The Evil Within. I'm about two-thirds of the way through that game, so I'm going to finish that up. I'm planning on kind of playing games that are kind of that have sequels coming out this year. So The Evil Within, South Park, stuff like that is kind of what I'm focusing on for the most part.
Cool. I couldn't play The Evil Within. I'm too scared. I've become a wuss.
It is surprisingly not a scary game.
Really?
It is just you are high intensity the entire time. Like, there are a couple parts that are scary, so don't get me wrong. But maybe, like, I played Amnesia last year, and now just nothing scares me anymore. I've kind of been numb to the scariness, yeah. But yeah, it's cool. It's intense. It is stressful as far as like making sure you have enough bullets. I feel like I'm always at a point where I have like a ton of bullets and then I lose them all by fighting in a big boss battle or something like that. And I'm down scrounging around for everything again. So it's fun. It's fun. I highly recommend it to anyone who can suck it up and actually play the game.
Well, if you want to see more, twitch.tv/Adesis, is it?
It's a /4playerpodcast.
Oh, you stream on the 4player.
Yeah, I stream on the 4player account. So it's a 4, like, spelled out player podcast. Or just 4pp.tv with the number 4 is the easiest way.
Well, and you also have your Twitter account that is going to be in the show notes. That's Adesis, and I'm sure you can find all of this from there.
Yep.
And for me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter and Facebook, and you can also find the show and go comment if you think we've said some silly things at frenchspin.com, and you can also leave a review on iTunes or on any other podcast platform that you enjoy. That would be very helpful, of course, so go leave a review and a few stars if you are so inclined. And that's going to be it for us. We will be back in a couple of weeks, maybe slightly delay, so we can have the news from Gamescom. We'll see what happens, but we'll be back and we'll have a fun show again. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Ed, for being on, and we'll talk to you then. Bye.
Bye.